name is, how's it go, Little Miss Muffin? Eating her?
Seven pennies.
Now, whey is often called the siuva de kelva, or some kind of byproduct of the milk. So you water down milk. The curd is the fatty part, and the whey is the watered down part. The issue whether what kind of halakhic status it has. Is it really considered kolov or not considered to be full kolov? We assume it is. There is, how's it go, Little Miss Muffin? Eating her? Eating whey. Everyone knows that.
Seven pennies.
Now, whey is often called the siuva de kelva, or some kind of byproduct of the milk. So you water down milk. The curd is the fatty part, and the whey is the watered down part. The issue whether what kind of halakhic status it has. Really considered kolov or not considered to be full kolov. We assume it is considered to be kolov. And there's an issue further in the Shulchan Aruch concerning cheese. The cheese is conditionally converted from milk into hard cheese by using something called rennet. Big question whether this. Immediate question. Rennet comes from the stomach lining of a cow. So you ready? It's ready, boss of a color. Before you turn around, boss of a color. So the Mepharshim explained that it's not really boss of a color because the rennet is a very infinitesimal percentage, it's less than 1 in 60. And these are the concepts that we'll discuss later called Dover Hamami. Very important concept to know. Dover Hamami, a filu ve'elef lo bottle. What does it mean? Usually you think that bottle, they're rendered insignificant if they're less than 1 in 60 of the entire total. But the Dover Hamamid, if it causes something to literally to rise, Hamid, Yamo, is going to go up, makes the milk convert into cheese, or the liquid into a salad, it's called Dover Hamamid, and it's never bottle, even if it's 1,000. What's the question becomes? So, the minute you have the whole cheese should be drank, they didn't have to tell it. Every single piece of cheese should be drank because it's made with balsam bakala. The rennet all came from meat sources. So the Shulchan Aruch passed itself. If something is intrinsically prohibited on its own and it's used then to make something else rise, then it prohibits it. It in itself is permissible. And the object upon which it works is also permissible. So in the combination that's problematic, possible color. Then there's no halacha of Dover Hamamid. It's not an intrinsically prohibited substance. So dried up that it has no taste whatsoever, you disregard it completely. And if we use rennet from a non-kosher source, intrinsically non-kosher, how so? From an animal which is not properly slaughtered or which has a hole in its lung as a trapha, you discuss the leaf or veil or trapha. Then, in fact, it does prohibit the milk when it turns into cheese. But here, it's intrinsically prohibited independently. Okay. This ends Siman Pei Zayin. Now it's gone to Siman Pei Ches. We're going in order. Siman Pei Ches, we are taught, you're not supposed to put meat and milk on the same table on which you're eating, because we're afraid that a person is going to have the meat and then reach for the cheese. And they're going to touch each other, and in theory they can be cooked with each other if they're both hot. If not, of course, others, it's there, they may mix them with each other. and even chicken. Even chicken. This is only a rabbinical prohibition. Nevertheless, the rabbis prohibit even chicken to be on the same table as milk or cheese. That's how we generally assume. But Shulchan Aruch says, if it's the table upon which you place the cooked items, not what you eat, let's say a counter, or some of the description, a counter, then it's okay. You're not eating, it's not a problem. Leads to a major issue, which comes up many times in the subsequent simanim, but I don't want to talk about it head on. Actually, we seem to have quite a call from a rabbi on Friday, but it's very shy. One of the sfarim on the bottom, called the Yad Avram, he discusses the issue of people who have the pots, placing the pots, building the pots in the same counter, why aren't we afraid that there's going to be some taste mixture of the places with the buildings? The Yad Avram says, that the following principle, very important principle, which he quotes in the Rambam later on, quote, Ein avalua v'kli olechas imena v'lo rotev. Very important. We believe that in the medium of heat, there can be all kinds of transfer of taste. There's two distinct levels of transfer. One is an object transfers its own taste, piece of meat, transfers taste into cheese or any other item, potatoes. There's also a concept called volua, something which is absorbed in another medium. For example, I have meat which is absorbed in a pot. So there's a famous principle called ein volua yotzei v'lo rotev. Something which is absorbed within something would not go out so easily without a medium of liquid. In other words, liquid, hot liquid is the ultimate carrier. But if there is a situation where there is no liquid, so it depends. If I have a piece of tray for meat on top of my chicken, so the taste can move even without liquid. We'll discuss later. Something is balua, it's absorbed within something else, and you have to get it out. Not so simple to get it out. You can only get it out if it's hot liquid. And therefore, in this particular case, let's say you have a counter. You put a hot glacier pot on the counter, filled with chicken soup. Take it off, put it away. An hour later, put a piping hot pot filled with milk on the same counter. Gaval! How can you do it? The Yad Avram says there's no problem. There's no problem. Because the establishment absorbed in the pot will not get out into the counter because there's no liquid medium. Question. What if there's a spill? You know, these things happen, you know, even in the clean kitchen, there are times when things spill. And pots have condensation or overflow. It's a very important symbol of the Chavas Das. Chavas Das is one of the great scribes in the back of the earth. They are a very great man. Rabbi Yaakov of Lisa, came from the town of Lisa, for many great works. He proves that when we discuss rotev, we mean significant rotev. It means it's submerged in a large amount of fluid, of liquid. And if it's just a little bit that's spilled over, that doesn't count. That's nothing. So therefore, as a rule, ein volua yotzei mikli l'kli v'lo rotev. So no problem. Even if things spill a little bit, still not a problem. And the Yad Avram says, although the Ramah later on says, despite the fact that ein volua yotzei mikli l'kli v'lo rotev, nevertheless, l'chatchila is the principle we're going to see many, many times. Really, it's kosher. So l'chatchila, ideally, should be not to worry about it. and we should worry about something going to feel this people or other. Some minority view claims that it can happen. So they got it wrong. And that we're talking about meat and dairy touching each other. That's your Amos case. A meat pot touched a dairy pot. Then we worry, in the first instance, like Achila, try to avoid it. And here they're both touching a parma surface. You have a meat pot on the counter and a dairy pot on the counter. So then we say, in the Lua Yotsu, we see the people are rota, they can't get from the pot into the counter without a significant amount of liquid. And therefore, that's the Minig Yisrael, based upon the Mishnah, which is quoted in Shulchan Aruch here, that Sulchan should so know the counter is not a problem of having one counter with meat that could there, even at the same time, if the pots are covered on top, so we're not afraid of the splatter, and certainly one after the other. That's the Minig Yisrael, which always existed before today's modern kitchens, having one counter, and they had inflation, and they had politics. That's how it was today. The world of affluence and large kitchens, then, I mean, I agree. You have a large kitchen, you better have two of everything. Two stoves, two sinks, two counters, two everything. I'm the first to agree to it. My kitchen is so small, as we'll learn later on in the end of the year, the mezuzah of my kitchen is facing out. This is not even 4 hours by 4 hours. That's how small the kitchen is. I can't have two counters or two sinks, so I can only have enough for one counter and one sink and one stove. That depends on your circumstances. Now, there are those who disagree with everything I just said. There's always not me with me, always a little more spirit. I'm giving you my opinion. But I have the Chabad Das on my side, I got a Rav on my side. So, shouting out on Friday's basic challenge. There is a somebody moved into a house with a new kind of oven. Apparently there's a glass, you ever see it? Glass on top. And when you put a metal pot down on it, it creates a kind of magnetic reaction and heats up the pot. And you can't do anything about it. You can't catch it. What do you do with it? It's a glass top. The question is, what do you do about pledging to build it? Create before. What do you do about it? So we had a combination of various factors to use the oven. One that some say a glass doesn't build anything. We'll talk about that later. We'll have to discuss in the second line of this book. It talks about Kasher and Kalin and what it does absorb, what doesn't absorb. The big dispute is Shemanar Brahmah, whether the glass absorbs anything. And some say glass absorbs nothing. And then we added a few more things. One of them was this. Maybe the glass doesn't absorb because things cannot get from a pot to the glass without the medium of liquid. And even little spills, we said, were not necessarily considered liquid. Not enough. If you'll ask me a question, how come the full tape that everybody knows the kasha the burners? Or you replace the burners? I also replace the burners in my house before Pesach. You know what I mean? The burner that the pot sits on? So the answer is you're right. It says in Shabbat. This is called a chatzuba. Or as the Rambam calls it, the Shabbat calls it a dreifus. Tripod. So you just put the pots on. Required what we call lipa, the very wrong method of kashrut to make it red hot. The Mishnah Berurah writes over there, it's a chumrah. Not really a requirement. Because strictly speaking, we should say that nothing is absorbed. The pain, the lua, the yotzi, the kli, the kribal are relative. They don't put their pizza directly on the burner. They do. Could be. Could be that you have, let's say, for example, you have spaghetti. That's a good comment. Spaghetti. And you pick the spaghetti off the pot and you take it off the fire and the water, which is chomisic water, was zrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr something in the pot. That could happen, but first of all, we'll get to that mix a little bit later. If it's a little bit of spills on a red hot burner, we soon it gets burned up, it gets absorbed. anxious, sorrowful. The water sort of stops it. It's a little bit, a lot, you have a problem. But we'll get to it, we'll discuss it. Okay, any questions? You can always ask questions anytime you want. All right. The Balaro says, two people will know each other, you can't eat one plate, one little at the same table, unless they make a hecker. What's a hecker? Something which is used as a way of discerning, of remind them of one thing is patient, one thing is milk, they shouldn't mix up their food. What's an example of a hecker? Well, there's two different tablecloths. Well, they put something in between them. Very important. Got it sometimes, you know what happens in our house sometimes. Let's say Sunday is a good example. So we have leftovers. Plastic leftovers, it's enough for two people. And five people are eating. So who wants plastic? Who wants milk? You know what it is. So what often happens is that one side of the table is eating plastic. And one side is eating little bits. What do you do? You can't say no. You have to have a tablecloth. Or a tablecloth and a table. Tablecloth is covering half the table. That's a plating aside, for example. The middle side has no tablecloth. So that's a hecker. That's valid. Or face mask, things of this nature. That's a kind of a carrier, but not so great. You have to see if you put a decanter or a flower pot or a loaf of bread that you're not using. It's recognizable. Also good. But the simple way is a different table. Place mats or with without a tablecloth, etc. Then the Rambo adds, you shouldn't drink from the same utensil. These guys, one of these feet, one of these buried. You know, they're giving us a little water. Because the mackerel is this back complete. And I'm having, I don't know what, I'm having chicken. And I stick the water, and then the little chicken gets on the glass. You're having milk, and a little bit of milk that's on the glass, so that glass is milky and meaty. We don't do it anyway, we have health considerations, you know, we're fantastic germs, you know, we're generally speaking more careful about this. Certainly they cannot eat the same loaf of bread. The loaf of bread, you know, is one guy has a bread will have put his meaty hands in the bread, next to put his very hands in the bread. The guy that you have should not be sharing the same loaf. And you shouldn't use the same salt dish. In those days, the salt dish was something that you dip things into. This will happen someplace, right? A dish that's full of salt, you dip your bread into it, you dip the meat into it, you dip the cheese into it. So you can't have the same one of both, because obviously you dip the meat into it, you dip the cheese into it, and turn around, there's a bus of a olive and the salt dish. But the question of what about today, when we have what?
Salt shaker.
If your kid put it into the soup, like some of mine do, trying to pour it into the soup, and then you can't use it, you know, because it gets all clumpy and real wet and stuff. So then obviously you have to have two different times. But if you don't do that, strictly speaking, you should use it. Except, if you put it in a place where there's a lot of steam coming up, I'll get to later. Steam is a problem. When we get the steam, we'll mention that. That's why, ideally, you should have two separate salt shakers. If you can't find the appropriate one, so, you know, be a little careful. Let's put it to a steamy place. It really is not an absolute law to require cooling. Okay, we just finished pay test. Pay test is one of the most important simanim that we're learning. There's a famous 6-hour story. The famous 6 hours. Shogunarov said that a person ate meat, whether it be from an animal or even from a bird, Rabbona, cannot eat cheese until you wait 6 hours. Why not? Why not?
What's the color?
Find out later. What's the color? What's the color? There are two different reasons given. One is that meat has a long-lasting aftertaste. The task calls Motzi Shumo the Moshe the Tam's Manorah. The meat pulls out taste particles or taste fluids, and it's an aftertaste for a long time. The Chazal said we treat it on a rabbinic level as if it were basar b'chol. You have the taste of meat in your mouth, and they have it built, it's terrible. Reason number one. Reason number two is that the meat stuck between your teeth. Meat stuck between your teeth is still considered to be meat, and therefore you have to wait 6 hours. What will the 6 hours do? Well, by that time, the oil is all gone. Some say once you wait 6 hours, it's not going to be anymore. It's a limit. It's a matter of dispute among the folks. Bottom line, if you ate meat 6 hours ago, and you still find meat between the teeth, you gotta get rid of it. Lost. Rush. Get it out. And then, beyond that, you have to rinse your mouth. There. This is the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch. And he's fine with me. You are stuck with this Pesach for good. There's no way out of this one. Unless you marry an Ashkenazi. Depends on how much Ashkenazi you marry. We'll see that in a minute. The Ramah quotes meaning Ashkenazi of old, which was, no, it's only to wait 6 hours. As soon as you finish eating, you bench. You rinse out your mouth and you wipe it around a little bit. Enough. You don't have to wait at all. Too good to be true. Rambam, what do we usually call? Rambam, Rambam Shislav. Can I mention this week about the introduction?
Yeah.
Take an introduction? Shulchan Aruch, Rambam, Svar, Ashkenaz, never gave this? No. Shulchan Aruch was written. You know what I'm reading here? It's a big book called what? Shulchan Aruch. Yosef Karo. Yosef Karo lived in the 16th century. He was kicked out of Spain, and then he moved, I think, somewhere to Africa, then he moved to Turkey, and then he moved to Sfas, in Eretz Yisrael. He was the greatest of the great. He wrote the Beis Yosef and forever. He was writing in Turkey for 20 years, he was writing and writing and writing, collecting all his stories that existed, and he wrote in the order of what we call the Tur. Very important, you're a little general back of the Halacha. The Gemara ended in the year 500, approximately, when we count. Then the Gaonim added a few things, and then the Rishonim started writing their Kitzurim, their Halachas. The Rib wrote the Kitzur on the Gemara, he left it only back and forth, only gave it the bottom line of the Gemara. Talmud, the Rambam, famous work of Halakh on all areas, whether they are pertinent today or not. The Rambam did it, he put it in a logical order. And the Tur, who was the son of the Rush, and was thereby very qualified to bring together the two schools. You see, the Sephardic school had the tradition of the Rish and the Rambam. The Ashkenazi school had the tradition of Rashi, first Bali Atosra, and Tam. And they also had certain Sifri Halakh, although not too many of them. They were more to we called their alumnus. They were interested in shots back and forth. So the Rush was the Talmud of the great Baram of Rutenberg. If you've heard of him. Unpaid rent. Did we know you were kids? No. The Babish put it out of unpaid ransom. Never heard of it? But you go on. Unpaid ransom is sort of a true story. It's the bottom of the structure. They added it up. Aram of Rutenberg came to the city of Rutenberg in Germany. France, Germany was one empire of those days in the 13th century. And the king wanted to capture him. For ransom. They wanted to levy a major fine, a tax. The Jews didn't have the money to pay. They figured to capture them Aram. They'll pay any money to get their Aram out. I'm worried about it. He ran away. the bad fortune that is somewhere on the way to Italy, some Meshuvahs recognized Meshuvah was the worst thing in the Middle Ages. See, a convert to Christianity was the worst. The Malshinim al Tikva, these are the Meshuvahs. So he blew the whistle, notified the magistrate, they locked him up, brought him back, they put him in jail in Montreux. Have you been there? I was there. Migdal Eisenheim school. They have Jewish that are on the road from Migdal Eisenheim. It's a, you know, a little geography. Lake Geneva, big, big lake. At Geneva, one side of Montreux, on the other side, close to German Switzerland over there. And that's where apparently the Maram, more the tradition anyway, was put it, knocked up. And the community wanted to redeem. We said, no way. He would not allow himself to be redeemed. If anything, it says in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, a potent as a shvuyin Yosef McVeigh the man, not permitted to ransom a captive more than they were, because for an obvious reason, what's the obvious reason? No, they'll capture more. The Shadi came out 25 years ago. I read an article today. This is the 25th anniversary of, no one's old enough to remember it. Anybody? This month. This month is the 25th anniversary of Black September. Nobody? Black September? Black September, an incredible month. It was a month during which there was a tremendous battle between King Hussein, still on the throne, believe it or not, King Hussein and the PLO. So the terrorists went bananas. There was a big fight between them and they captured a plane, or three planes. That's what was the most interesting thing. They captured three planes filled with Americans. They hijacked them. So they went to Tel Aviv to New York. And they hijacked them and they almost killed them. And it was a big danger. And they finally put them down somewhere in some base shop, middle of nowhere. And they finally flew them to Hamas. And they held them hostage. Each plane had fire. Plane had hundreds of people. There was a thousand, of over a thousand people held hostage. Only the hostage. 3 weeks, not a second. It was September. Well, amongst the great, every Jew is great, the very great rabbi on the plane. His name was Rabbi Hutner, as a part of the world. Moshe Yochai Bolin. He was on the plane. And of course, everyone was alarmed, but his students, his Hadidah, went crazy. They went missing the circle. You gotta get the Rosh Yeshiva back, which is fine. They want to do some kind of commando operation, a la Entebbe, fine. But they wanted to pay off the Arabs. But they were Rosh Yeshiva. There were a thousand people there, but look, you know, that's fun. Pay off for our Rosh Yeshiva.
He was in Barcelona. The Rashi was also. This is not for now. The Rabbi had to run away from the end of his life in Israel because he wanted to make it. That's another Mishum, Pablo Christiani, written up in the book. So the Russian son, the tour, who was a much younger man, came to Spain to work with his father. He was in a perfect position to be able to combine the two traditions, which he did. But it's four tours. Says it in the Torah, for four tours, four kalas in the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. Given our four tours, what are our tours? Orachayim, that's the laws of daily life. Make up stuff every day. Brachos, davening, Shabbos, Yontif. That's Orachayim. Then there's Eben Ezer, laws of men and women, marriage, divorce, anything of this nature. Then there's Chosh Mishpat, money. And the fourth is the catch-all. That's the will of the other day. But that doesn't fit the other three, just put it in the other day. This will be the promise of the rabbi. So the rabbi's tradition of the other day, they speak. That's just sort of has everything else in it. Kashrus. What else is the other day? Kashrus, Nida, the Zuz that we mentioned before, Abodah Zara, Ribis, someone got in there, the Dorian, Abelis, there are a million different things. That's what we've been discussing all year on. Anyway, so the tour wrote his magnum opus. He only wrote on things which are practical. He scored groups. He left out the laws of Carbonus, the laws of Tumah. Even though there is really left in the Truman that made only one simon, and once they lived in the diaspora. He came along with Yosef Kara and wrote a tremendous work called Beis Yosef, which he quoted all the relevant sources on the tour. I think it's a monumental work. Same time, a man named Ramah, Moshe Islish, was a contemporary living in Krakow, exactly the same time, also wrote a book called Dark Emotion, in which he also collected the views and the letters to the Joseph left out. Then, in a very radical idea, Rav Yosef Kar wrote a Shulchan Aruch. The word Shulchan Aruch was found in Chazal. Mishpat is the first pasuk. Ve'elah Mishpat is the first pasuk. So then the Rashi goes from Chazal. That if the Moshe is required to give Bnei Yisrael the Torah and not use like but the Shulchan Aruch, like a set table, just eat. So in the introduction, he writes that he writes the Shulchan Aruch. It's very brief. You can review it once a month. He actually wrote divide like that till the divide after 10 days of the month. He had to divide the Shulchan Aruch in a month. The whole Torah in 30 days. It wasn't that long. 40 people aside from that. Of course, he was criticized, same as Rama was during his day, because people are going to not know what they're talking about. They just memorize the Shemuel, they don't know what comes to the Gemara, whatever. The Rama, what we call the Mappah, the tablecloth on that table. The difference, the primary difference is that the Shemuel, whenever the dispute Ashkenaz is fired, Shemuel passed his fire, it was his fire. He said, I'm going to have a Supreme Court with three members, the Riv, the Rambam, and the Rosh. The majority rules. We stack the court with Svarim, two Svarim and an Ashkenazi. So the Ramos made only one change. Took out the Rif and put in the Rabbeinu Tam. That's all. So now I had 2-1 Rav Ashkenazim. Simple. As they write to the things right there, respect them introduction. So that's why usually, in other words, the Shulchan Aruch reflects the Sephardic Shabbat and the Ramos Ashkenazim Shabbat. For many years, the Shulchan Aruch and Ramos were hanging in the balance. Is it going to be accepted by the Jewish people or not? I would say for 200 years, it was a fight. Should you or shouldn't you accept the Shulchan Aruch? Well, look at it, I can tell you a case. I was involved in a situation. A man read the Shulchan Aruch in a way, and he couldn't disprove it based on a reading of the Shulchan Aruch itself. He wanted to permit something which is usher with an Issa Chorus. It was a question of Nida. He read the Shulchan Aruch a certain way, and he couldn't say it was wrong based on Shulchan Aruch, and based on that he came to a certain conclusion, which would have meant that there would be a violation of Chorus, right there. Prove what the great rabbi said. If you don't know the Gemara, you never learn, you just look at the Shulchan Aruch, and out of any context, you can make terrible, terrible mistakes. So the reason that it's been accepted is because there's so many super commenters on the outside, now longer than anything else was. So presumably any mistake you make will be corrected by people on the outside. We hope. The discussion among the lady, how authoritative is the Shulchan Aruch? We have to accept it. We argue with it. We're about our different approaches. Some say Rav Yosef Kara, what the Rambam wrote, is like a Ruach HaKodesh, that Hashem arranged what should be in or shouldn't be in, and then what's a very, very high-powered approach. The Rabbi Yonah is an ancient right, one of the Sfarim. But it's called the Dalet Tzedek. I said, Shulchan Aruch and Rambam say this way. And it's going to cost me $1,000. I said, I want to follow a different opinion. Usually you can say, look, it's two opinions, and you want to take money away from me, I'm also going to have a bail of a right, I don't keep the money. That's the Rabbi Yonah, the neighbor's rights. No. Shulchan Aruch and Rambam say this way, that's the way it is. It's like a bus call came out, so that's what it's asking, you can't go against it, boom. Now, this is the great. The bill to go in August, Shulchan Aruch, every page. But it's still what his parents be right wrong, Shulchan Aruch. I mean, he recognized that this is the way, this is the point of departure. Anyway, this is a digression. Ashkenazi Poskim originally said, you don't need to wait 6 hours, you don't need to wait any hours, you just bench and you wash out your mouth and wipe out your mouth again. Said to Ramah, a minig a poshut to wait 1 hour. Benching in 1 hour. Consider a different meal. This is still the Dutch custom. And here from Holland? I didn't think so. You're from Holland, you're doing very well. You're married guy from Holland, a Dutch guy. Are there any from Dutch guys that want to do this?
Yeah.
Is that a loud list of girls that want to go out with them? Because, I mean, you don't have to wait 1 hour. I'll buy them. So, that's a Dutch cousin. And the Ramada then calls the custom is to wait 6 hours. The came not on Lazo. It's proper to do this.
That was Miriam.
And the Shah,
really?
Number one super commentary, close to the Mashal, was a contemporary and cousin, I think, of the Ramah, who says, the came Roy Lassos, the Palmishiesh for Reach Torah. If you have any semblance of your Ventura or Bastora, you have to wait 6 hours. Everyone wait 6 hours. The Yekis wait 3 hours. No one understands where this comes from. This is halacha, the Yekis get tracked for it. I don't know where this comes from. Try to give this explanation, that explanation, all this thing is so difficult. I don't believe it hanging. I don't know where. Many people say that even if you're a Yekis, you should change to 6 hours. Because we don't know where it comes from. It's wild. But, yes?
So 5 hours and 1 minute?
Yeah, some say 5 and a half, 5 and a minute. It's probably a bluff. Rabbi writes the Moshe show, it's about 6 hours. So they say, all right, it's been 6 hours, 5 and a half hours. I don't like it at all. It says 6 and 6. Shabbat says Shay show.
Why
is it? Rabbi says Kabbalah. Shabbat says Kabbalah. So we usually wait 6 to 11. Big question, the count, when do you start counting? Yes? They can't convince the husband to wait 6, then they should adopt the three. The general principle that when it comes to menhagim, if you marry a man, you accept his menhagim, period. Whether it be strict, make it more strict or more lenient, always adopt his menhagim. Only reason I'm not saying with a full heart in this case, is I think that he should change to 6 hours now before his marriage, so it's not new to you. So that's why I didn't say wholeheartedly to take his cousin. If he insists on his 3 hours, you gotta go along for 3 hours. I mean, don't feel so bad. I don't understand the cousin. Doesn't have it happen. Yes?
I don't understand the rationale behind the 6 hours. I understand where the Ramah is coming from. I mean, if the two reasons given for waiting is the aftertaste and, you know, me stuck between the teeth, and by brushing one's teeth or, you know, mouthwash, whatever it is, that, you know, I guess both together, those reasons are really gone, then you wouldn't have to wait 6 hours. So I understand where it's coming from.
Very good question. The answer probably is we're afraid he won't wash, he won't floss, he won't rinse, he won't whatever, I guess. Six, yeah. Very good question. Where's number 6? Imagine number. The answer, the Gemara doesn't have number 6. Doesn't say 6. The Gemara says, how can there be so much confusion over here? What did the Gemara say? Hey, you can't make up dinner. What did the Gemara say? So the Gemara said that one of the Amoraim said like this, I compared to my father, I'm like the vinegar of the son of wine. Now, no, nothing compared to him. He waited 24 hours in relation to Milibus. Just like Lucas. 24 hours. And I only wait from soup to the soup. From one meal to another, that's all. That's all, one meal to another. Doesn't say how many hours it is. Some say 4 hours. You bench, you inhale your mouth, that's it. Others say 1 hour, all right, 1 hour. Where does 1 hour come from, they say? Because you usually don't have a 1 hour break between the middle of a meal. Most people are not going to sit there. How long are the speeches going to the prophet? That's a surprise. But usually never less than 1 hour in the middle of a meal. Or a meal can go 2 hours. The middle is only 1 hour. And therefore, that's already considered a little meal. Well, we wait six because in those days they only ate 2 meals a day. They ate a meal before noon, another meal as soon as the evening occurred. The 6 hours between, that's where I'm going to come for 6 hours. That's where the food number six comes from. So they say that in Germany they ate 5 meals a day, there was only 3 meals, there were 3 meals. So some of those are not true, they only ate 3 meals a day. And they say, well, in Germany, the dawn climate, so between noon and dawn and dusk, it's only 3 hours. Bump, that's also not true. 4 hours in some places. We don't know exactly what, we don't know. We don't know. Any questions? Yes. Oh, I know. Hold on. So when does the clock start? So the overwhelming majority of postcards say it starts when you finish eating pleasures. Finish eating meat. The minute you stop the meat, that's the end. So look at your clock. I was at a bar mitzvah on Sunday. So I looked at my clock when I finished the meat. I remember it. It's a big question. What if you don't look at the clock and you don't remember? What do you do? You don't remember when you finished eating meat. You don't remember. Time was the summer. We went to a weekend. And we were told around the whole table, 10 people. No one could remember exactly when you finished eating meat. And they served the middle of the shellships. So, we'll see. They're like idiots. When did we finish? Why did we look at our watch? Why did we look at our watch? Why don't we look at the clock? What do you do in that kind of case? You go strict or you lenient? Most folks say have to be strict. And even though it's only rabbinic, the Rabbana, they have a famous rule, what's the famous rule called? No. Sabbe, come on. The Rabbana, no. The Hakel, the Tula. This they say, the Dabba Shiyesh Lo Matiri. That means we'll get to that concept later. Something which you just weigh a little bit, then it's going to be permissible. As if you have no choice, either you eat it or you discard it, so you can be legion in rabbinical matters. Here you have a choice, weigh there for now. So we had to wait the extra time. Look at your watch whenever you... Some of them will eat it, but they say, look, it hasn't made a minute in the space. So those who are in doubt now have a very pressing need to be lenient. I can understand. But try to look at your watch when you finish, yes.
Okay, what about the
infinite thing of
business? Five hours.
No business.
I'm against it. Okay, but
some say it. I told you, commoche show. Some said about 6 hours. I said, about six, once you're, you know, like my father always say when someone had his 10th birthday, oh, you're almost 11. And the next day, you're almost 11. So you're 5 hours and 1 minute, oh, it's almost 6 hours. You know, the joke is good, but I mean, but she really be the day. All right, clear? Cole?
Yeah.
Everything's great? Oh, my shame. What about relationships you have to do? But I said no problem. No problem. If it's at night, you can't see, you have to wash your hands, make sure no cheese to the left. If it's by day, examine them. Plus, you also have to rinse your mouth and wash it out. Say, wipe it and wash it. So writes the Shulchan Aruch. That's if you want to have meat, red meat after cheese. If you want to have chicken after cheese, you don't even need the washing of the hands or the rinsing of the mouth. You know, some are strict and say, believe it or not, 6 hours
cheese, and meat. But it's only true they're called Wiener Kosher. Very hard cheese. What's very hard cheese? They have holes in them. What does that mean? Swiss cheese. They're very, very... sharp. What do you say about this? Sharp, what do you call it?
Yeah.
Sharp. I'm told, and I'll just jump either, that pizza is not so sharp. What pizza they want right away, you know? I remember this thing that once had a Shiloh from somebody, someone who related to someone in the class, once had a Shiloh, Mamash the Maisa, where a woman had hard cheese, mixed Swiss cheese, an Arab Yom Kippur for lunch. And all of a sudden, it came into the Suda before, I think, I'm pretty sure it was, all of a sudden, it's the Suda of segment, of course, the chicken, whatever it may be, and the Shiloh was, the Valt. So they put it back and forth, what kind of cheese it was, it's hard, so I don't need cheese. I can't imagine myself. I don't know exactly. I think we came to a leading few on the ground. It wasn't really so hard. Then it was kind of a cock. We got the boy of Kipper. And so he said. Yeah. Dover Sheyesh Lo Matirish. Over expression. Dover Sheyesh Lo Matirish. With his whale is impatient for the Kamutta. So wait, as Rashi puts it, Ashito, Plano Big Isis, Plano Behector. Instead of taking a chance eating it in a positive way with his passion, wait to lead it in the permissible fashion.
So how long?
To be sure, 6 hours of prepared.
How do you keep food on the fire on Shabbos properly?
Karoim, the Karaites, they said you can't have any fire burning in the house of Shabbos. They took the pasuk literally. It really means you can't light a fire on Shabbos. You can't have a fire on Shabbos. It's in the dark. There's no fire, nothing. But the Bala Morai, some of the value you have from on Shabbos, is suspected of being a heretic. It must be a Karaite. So what they're really having hot stuff? I don't need it. Because I like hot stuff. So that's just what I eat in the tables. That's my minute. They have John, big thing with the beans and the beans and the stuff. one of the records had that. How did it go? Sholin, they powered rockets will sell man to the moon. I can get sick every month of Shabbos. Every month of Shabbos, they're sick. Okay.
Person said, the first eight was called Kapshlus Lebos. Let's say he has another shoulders. Shoulders, meat, and meat, potatoes, all kinds of things. Various places where they serve shalom, and they force us to introduce shalom to the shop. I have a Yiddish house about shalom. All right. I managed to grow with one, and she did also, but now we have both the shalom. So we learned last year on the Shabbos that it's complicated. How do you keep food on the fire on Shabbos properly, and this. But the Karoim, the Karaites, they said you can't have any fire burning in your house on Shabbos. They took the pasuk literally. It really means you can't light a fire on Shabbos. You can't have a fire on Shabbos. It's at the dark. There's no fire, nothing. So the Bala Morai, some of the Nadi Hakim on Shabbos, is suspected of being a heretic. Must be a Karaite. So once they're already having hot stuff, I don't need it. Because I like hot stuff. So that's just what I like in the potatoes. That's my minute. They have to show them big with the beans and the meat and the stuff. one of the records had that. How'd it go? Sholin made powered rockets will send man to the moon. I can get sick every Monday Shabbos. Every Monday Shabbos, they sit there to run to the bathroom. Because they had the chump, as the Reagan predicts. That's exactly what it said. It's crazy. But all right, the Shugans, the chump. But I only eat the potatoes, yes. The Balamor. Balamor was a Zrachi Halevi, one of the great rabbis of Provence, southern France. It's part of a poem. You know, I don't have the Gemara here. I don't know if you're allowed to the Gemara's. In the Gemara Shabbos, you'll see there's a parish in the back called the Rif. Maybe I haven't heard the Rif before. The bottom of the Rif, there are a few other Jerusalem. The one is called the Morakot. Godel Morakot, the same author, the Bala Mor. They had a tradition. They wrote a long piece that ended with a rhyme, with a little poem. The Bala Mor has a rhyme which every phrase ended the word with the syllable min. Something like it. Something or other, someone who's a ma'amin will eat chamin, you know, hachol, and yizka l'keitze yamin, that'll be very good, the kind of messiah, and someone who doesn't is called a min. Min is the Aramaic term for Arabic. So that's why the min gets in there. I don't know if you were to just supposed to make a rhyme, or maybe that seriously, but that's the mythic of the karoi, that's why you put it in there. Yeah. That's all the stories. So good. So you know, your stories about childhood, stories about the business, the farm. Buy the potato or the chum, that's it, nothing else. Potato. The potato was cooked with the meat. But I like the potato. Must I wait 6 hours after the potato? Shulchan Aruch says, no. No. What do you mean, no? Yeah. I want another potato. Other potato was cooked with cheese. So I can eat the leishik potato and then eat right away the milk potato. That I can do. I want to actually eat what? Cheese after the leishik potato. That, you have to wash your hands. That's all. That's what you said. You have to wash your hands. So you don't wait 6 hours. The most of those we can do is wash your hands. See, the place you can potato, and then the little potato, you have to wash your hands. What did the show up? The most is yes. See, the place you can potato and cheese, you should wash your hands. Don't even wait 6 hours. Says the Rambam, always the party pooper over here. The Noah Guacha Lachmir to wait 6 hours. The aim of the Shalas will differ together. The end. You have to wait 6 hours after the clay sugar potato which is cooked with the cholent. That's all.
What about chicken soup? Chicken soup. The Ramos says chicken soup. That you still have to wait 6 hours. Chicken soup is not called like, it's not like potatoes. Potatoes have to do with meat. Yeah, chicken soup, that's the, or the schmaltz, we call it. You know what schmaltz is?
Yeah.
Chicken fat. The name is something about chicken fat, but there's something about that too. Exercise, chicken fat. Because the song said, the show the moon and the chicken fat, and you remember the shear this way. Alright? So, chicken fat, and probably chicken soup as well, is likely considered to be the category of meat. You have to wait 6 hours after that food. But, says the Rambam, what if there's no meat at all? It was only cooked in a pleasure capacity. Then there's no need to wait 6 hours. The emotion. You cook the potato in the pleasure kapak, there's no need to wait 6 hours. Ask the chef, he must be kidding. If you cook potatoes in the pleasure kapak, you can have it with butter, you can put butter on it. What kind of 6 hours? What's going on over here? It's a famous principle called, we'll get to it later. Not bar not. Have you heard it?
Mm-hmm.
No sentam bar no sentam. Well, what's going on? We don't have to wait 6 hours. So the shock is an answer. It's true, even if the pot is dirty, it wasn't washed, there's what's called sat mamoshes. There's even some leftovers there. So there's no din of not dry. Not when I only watch it was completely clean, it's only absorption. No said tam is absorption. And here, if it's as far as the waiting 6 hours is concerned, even though there's dirt, bottom of the, what does he call it? Well, he calls it, this sasma mosha, there's something there, it's still, you don't have to wait 6 hours. That's a biscuit soup. But, wait a second. What if the mamash is bottle of beshishim? Less than 1/60th. Says the biscuit soup. It's less than 1/60th. It's in the bottom. Biscuit soup means it's a collection of all the chubas in the responsible literature. The shach and the taz. There's a little Greek here. The shulanos in the middle, the Rambam. They lived in the 16th century. The Shach and the Taz on the side, Turei Zov is Taz, Sifsek on the Shach. They lived in the 17th century. Then, you had to build a Gom, the Yeragra, who else? You have a few other people, the Magda Yonason, Rabbi Yonason Abrashitz. They lived in the 18th century. Then you have the Rebbe Akiva Eger and the Pesachim Shulman, they lived in the 19th century. Every century, it was printed before 100 years ago, 20th century doesn't have yet. But they're on the side of the page. The Pesachim Shulman, he made his job as a gathering of all the various responses, even farmers related to the Shulmanar, and he put it under the order of the Shulmanar. He says, if the amount of meat is less than 1/60th of the sum total, it's like nothing existed, but it is, the Shach is an unbelievable halacha. And even though the amount of what he calls Shuman, Shmalt, something of this nature, which is in the, we'll call it the French fries, is more than 1/60, nevertheless, you don't have to wait 6 hours after you ate the French fries in order to eat local cheese. I repeat, this ketchuba says that you have French fries which are made with shuman, meat, chicken fat, or whatever, which is laid in the chicken fat, chicken juice, and chickeny oil. That's what they kind of deep fry. Chickeny oil, the oil which then has chicken, the previous. They put in the chicken nuggets and they put in the french fry. Yeah. kind of a case as long as the so you don't have to wait 6 hours. Very relevant. You go, let's say you went down to the cafeteria and had french fries. You have to wait 6 hours before you have milk? I don't think so. Don't pull this piece of chum up. I don't think you have to wait 6 hours. I don't know how they make it exactly, but actually they don't cook it with meat. It's not like the potatoes that I showed. The most they could have done is they put in what's called shuman. Shuman is some kind of a oil, liquid oil, which is liquid with moly and so on. That's how I understand the biscuit shuman. There are many people who say he's wrong. Biscuit shuman is wrong, it can't be, it's a mistake. But I thought he was right. So I tell people that they have french fries or kugel. I have kugel, so the kugel is, there's no meat in the kugel. The most there is a little bit of chicken fat, a little schmalt they put in, schmalt it up. The ooh, is out, ooh. So that, seems to be, the oil has some meaty residue in it. I don't think you have to wait 6 hours after these things. Yes?
What if it's like put in intentionally? I mean,
it's the same, still so very good. The same called the Yad Yehuda. The Yad Yehuda lived at the turn of the century. He was a tremendous gong. No one ever heard of him, probably. He was the abed of the place called Sadigura. Have you heard of Sadigura Hasidim? Have you heard? No? Famous. They also fought the Sanzas? No? That's the famous one. I mean, unfortunately, in the whole world. Oh, yes, Sadigura, they fought the Sanzas. The original dynasty. So he was an abed in the Sadigur at the turn of the century. He thinks that the Shah of the Shach is, you didn't put it in intentionally, but you were too lazy to wash the pot, that's all. Too lazy to wash the pot, a little left over, so then you don't have to wait 6 hours. You put the schmaltz into the french fries intentionally or into the kugel? Of course you have to wait 6 hours. That's what he says. So I thought that the biscuit sugar was against them. Position was wrong. See, I'm not here to say definitely was right or wrong, but I thought since, after all, Mr. Chuba said it, and Shach seemed to agree with it, well, it was a simple interpretation. That is, it's bound to be permissible. He's strict, fine, I have no objection. Yeah? Yes, Captain, sorry, when you read that, that's a Bible or something?
No, well, so, you still have like a math round, so I have it.
Like
in Trump,
they're
trying to do it. Let's say, like, there
would
be surplus,
so everything is because of adversary. I mean, since they don't know it, maybe it's book with a child. I don't know. They don't know for sure. So they say, because or they'll say, maybe you all have Yad Yehuda. So there's a little schmaltz, because Kathmasari. Or they'll say, it in more macho than anybody. Even if it's cooked the flesh in a pot with a little bit of left, I don't know. You know, Shemaila Kumras. So, I mean,
you know that the spoons
are transferred
between the spoons. Okay, yes. Yeah. So why would we be allowed to take
right. More than that, before the Shabbat Arah, after the flesh, they say you're gonna have cheese right after this. Cheese. The answer is, good question. If you are worried about the meat between the teeth, you understand. If you worry about the taste, the aftertaste of meat, you have to only afraid of the aftertaste of meat, it's actual meat. If it's gonna be, you know, just a potato, that's what's wrong in case of the alright. Now, someone ate milks. And now I want to eat flesh. Which you do right away, according to the Shulchan Aruch. You have to get rid of all the bread, which was eaten with milks. Why? Because that bread may have residue of cheese on it, and you cannot eat that with meat. Get rid of all the bread.
big argument about the Poskim, how much bread you have to get rid of. What about a loaf of bread? You can touch. What about slices of bread? Yeah.
Back to shop for a second. If you have the residue left in the pot, the sugar, and then you have potatoes in here, can you put butter on the potatoes? Or you can just eat cheese afterwards? So that way you can put it out.
That's the whole point of the shop. The shop's trying to find a case. We are not allowed to put butter on it. We still have to wait 6 hours. That's this whole quiz show over here. Trying to find a case where you're allowed to eat it within 6 hours. We are not allowed to put butter on it. Otherwise, that's the whole basis of a statement. Yes?
Somebody eats it
to
the
the Shulchanara says, the Ramah says you have to wait 6 hours. He doesn't spend the Shulchanara. Yeah. And in Sephardi you can follow the Shulchanara. So in Sephardi you can follow the Shulchanara. You have to follow the Ramah. It's a matter of dispute how much bread you have to get rid of. You have to get rid of all the bread or just the sliced bread. In my opinion, it's all a matter of how you, of your eating habits. For example, we have in the summertime, we have like the Shabbos, they put out bread, the pleishik of meals, and they put the same bread, they put it sometimes in shalashudas, so they add a shalashudas, they put out another malakim. Sometimes these loaves of, these have big, loaves of sliced challah, and no one touches it. In other words, my opinion is that the only time of the problem is if you have the bread lying around loose. So on the tablecloth, so you know this, the bread is loose and the cheese is loose. You can throw it back into the basket. So I tell the Talmidim, once it leaves the basket, throw it out. But what, this way, what's in the basket continue to be considered to be the category of parma. Even though it's on the table. Because I've worked with an assumption, maybe a false assumption, first put the pan into the kala basket to get out kala. Doesn't try to touch each piece. In my house, they touch each piece. This one. Each one is different, you know. It's bigger than the cocoa, it's more burnt, the less burnt, the one guy wants a cake. There's more chocolate chips, or less chocolate chips, or more sugar, or more. Yeah, but the challah, he slices it. Then, if you don't touch every piece, you take a piece, take it out, that's it. So that's why I don't think it's a problem. Yes. The little kid, all bets are off. They have to be very careful. Little kids, and they have to really be much more careful. Yes.
But in a regular circumstance where the challah stays on the challah plate or in the basket, you can either take that challah and eat breakfast Sunday morning with milk and put it in a milk egg.
I don't see why not. As long as it's, no one touched it with meaty hand, I don't see the problem. If you're nervous, don't do it. Get different challah for your French toast. But no one touched it. It should be a problem. Again, it all depends on your eating habits, how you work it. Moreover, to the Shulchan Aruch, you're not permitted to eat cheese on the same tablecloth on which you eat meat. Major issue. Does that apply nowadays? Some say no. In those days, they put the meat and the cheese directly on the tablecloth. Today, everything's on a plate. Plates are different. Others say no. Closer anyway. It seems to me that basically the strict halakha, the Pesach Shul again quotes from the Ramaz, that if you don't put the meat and the cheese directly on the tablecloth, it's okay. So therefore, it seems to me that, strictly speaking, now the tables may break when I say this, you can have one tablecloth for milk in some places. Oh, yeah?
Wow.
Good. And the reason for all this is because we don't put cheese and meat directly on the. Okay, now, of course, little kids, again, all bets are off.
But if this is, these days, it's not considered appropriate to put the immediate chief director in the temple. There's no place. Yes. I chair. I saw that two hummus. A flesh of God chair and a milk of God chair. Really, but two different trays. Look, come on. The kid is 2 years old. He's not the supermarket. If you and I chair, they have two different trays. But your baby does, it's not. Yes.
Why can't you just rely on the fact that the tablecloth gets washed? And
so without washing.
Okay.
Once you wash, it's okay.
You wash, it's okay.
I'm talking about if you don't wash. You say, you have breakfast. Mm-hmm. And you have lunch. Breakfast is Cheerios. And lunch is a salami sandwich. And you have both the same tablecloth. How can that be? No. So you get the Cheerios in a bowl, and the salami is in a plate. Again, it's a matter of dispute. And here comes an amazing thing. You have to have separate knives. You should use the same knife that you cut cheese and you shouldn't cut meat with. Lo and behold, believe it or not. Was the Chiddush? Is that obvious? Not obvious. Because strictly speaking, things are cold, no absorption of taste. See, in theory, you can cut cold cheese and then cut, rinse it off, cut cold meat, no problem. But the Shulchan Aruch shouldn't do it. Not that, but even the bread which you're using for the middle of your meal should not be cut with the flesh of your knife. So our custom, of course, has two separate knives, two separate utensils, everything. We have a very strong custom, two completely separate sets of dishes. Now, of course, concerning the major dishes, the pots, of course, they have two separate sets, as we shall see. But even if we use with cold, minig Yisrael is to have two separate sets of dishes. And that's universally accepted. Okay?
What if there's an accident?
We'll come to that. We'll spend most of the time about accident. But you can try to have two separate sets. I gotta tell you this, for the kicks, there was one great rabbi who had only one set of dishes. He wasn't reformed. His name was Rav Aaron Halevi. Rav Aaron Halevi lived, I believe, also in Barcelona, somewhere in Spain, in the late 13th century. And he said, look, I only have one set of dishes. One set of pots. What, are you kidding? He said in the Gemara explicitly that a pot that you use to cook meat, you may not use to cook milk. How can you do this? How did the Reverend in RLA, what does she do in the kitchen? So he said, that's only true, what we call it, an important phrase to get used to now, a ben yomo. What does ben yomo mean? Less than one day old, within a day. It was used for fleshiks. It was used to cook milk for breakfast this morning. You cannot use it for fleshiks to cook supper this evening. That's what tomorrow means. Are you patient with the Rav Aaron Halevi? Wait 24 hours, no problem. So the student, the disciple, the Ritva, famous Ritva, Yontem and Avram, the great disciples of the Ra'ah and of the Rashba, who in turn were disciples of the Ramban, they performed all these rules of the personalities on. Said he argued with him, Rebbe, what are you doing? How can you run a kitchen this way? Didn't listen. So that's the only one we know about the one set of dishes.
You gotta be very careful not to use them within 24 hours of each other. No one since then that I know about has only one set of dishes. Keeps a kosher home. Alright, let's finish it there. You need it all, okay. Of course, you have to have two sets for hot. The chinesh of even if it's cold, so you have to have two sets. Just giving simon tzadik, because it's about others. We don't need others these days. Tzadik aleph. Beat and cheat. Beat and cheat is touch each other. As long as they're cold, there's no absorption of taste. All you have to do is to rinse them off. But you shouldn't put the meat and cheese together for fear they'll forget to rinse them off. Unless it's something which you always rinse off. So I should show up. Now we come to hot stuff. Meat touches milk, cheese. What's the difference? So there are two possibilities. Tila. You know, get the phrase down now. Today the tila means the width of a finger. That's much more than today cleavers. Cleavers is a little thing that is possible peel. Today the tila. The width of a finger. As we shall see later, there's an exception to the rule. Let's end with this. The exception to that rule is what we call a dover shamei, something which is fatty. As the Gemara says, something which is fatty goes even beyond the tefila, goes, it's called the fa'afea b'kulo, it goes through the whole piece. And there are more rights later, we're not experts in what's shamei and what's not shamei. So we always have to be marked for the whole thing. So if cold goes into hot, It's over, because Natal Gavar, and even though she really has to stop after one finger, we're not experts on what's fat, so we have to prohibit everything. Hot falls into cold, though. Then, strictly speaking, really should have been mutter completely. We only require a little thin peel, and it could be that with the yamid, and cook without the peel, it might not be so bad, as we mentioned before. Okay, so next week we'll continue with the Simon Tzadi base. While it's busy cooling it off,